You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. In with me is my spin doctor, Thomas Callahan. We have some 80s, maybe, surprise me.
Maybe.
Hey, I saw Bryce Drew going to Grand Canyon. In fact, I saw him on the tube. That tells you how old I am, tube.
they don't have tubes anymore, Steve.
Tubes. Back about 2 weeks ago, and he was doing some commentary, and I said, you know what? He was a heck of a player. We all know that. When he played at Don't Tell Me. He was fantastic.
I could tell you.
Valparaiso.
Yes.
And then he had some heroic moments. And when he played at, I think he coached somewhere before he was at Vanderbilt, correct? Or was that his first job?
He did. He coached at Valpo, too.
Valpo, okay. So,
yeah.
So he went there and then suffered some bad moments there. But I thought he was a fantastic coach. At Valpo, that's why he got the job at Vandy. And I said, you know what, this guy still has it. He's got to be in his late 30s or early 40s, and then he ends up at Grand Canyon, which is a surprise to me that they fired Mr. Marley, Dan Marley. He had it going over there for a while.
First seven years, right, of the program.
Right. He replaced Russ Pennell, who was the associate head coach here or interim head coach here when Lute retired or Lute left for a year. And him and Mike Dunlap kind of were co-coaches throughout the season and took him to the Sweet 16 in a lucky kind of way. And, wow, that's a good hire. I think that's a great hire for Grand Canyon.
Yeah, and he got both teams that he coached into the tournament, although Vandy had a horrible year last year. They went 0 for SEC play.
That was under Stackhouse, I think, wasn't it?
2 years ago.
Okay.
They went 0 for SEC play when he was in his final year. That's one of the reasons he let him go.
Yes.
0 for 18.
And Stackhouse came in.
Yeah. So, but you know what? I mean, it was interesting, Stephen, reading that article. He actually said Grand Canyon was on his radar.
Yeah, well, it's that type of school. It has potential, not obviously to be that great school, but it's in a decent conference and has potential in a hotbed of Phoenix, too. And they have that crazy crowd at the student section.
I was going to say, I haven't been there, but I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's better than Arizona. It's not even close.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The student section? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
They're crazy. The last time they played down here, their students could be heard in the arena here.
Didn't they almost beat Kentucky a few years back?
Mm-hmm.
And Kentucky's like, we're never coming back.
Right. It was Kentucky. Patino took, it was Louisville.
Oh, Louisville.
Louisville. It was Louisville.
Okay.
Patino, and then, did we talk about this yesterday? The world is going to end?
Oh, yeah, because Patino got a coaching job?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just weird. Good show today, I think. I have a good friend and former sponsor guy. He sponsored a lot of things at U of A. He's a big sports fan. Cody Ritchie, who runs Crest Insurance, does a lot of advertising up in Phoenix and here for U of A and ASU. I wonder how that impacts his bottom line, if you will, for the advertising, now that nobody's going to games to see these things.
But people need insurance.
Yes.
Sure.
So, I mean, and what does that mean now? Can you get insurance for illnesses like this? I don't know. Or did you have? I don't know.
I know. You know, disability insurance, I would guess.
Yeah, I'll ask him. And then I have, he's at 6:15. And then I have Andy Brown at 6:30. He's a former U of A basketball player in the 94 Final Four. Didn't play a whole heck of a lot, but a great, great guy. And he's kind of the VP of the A-team. I know if people go to concerts or games and things like that, big events, he's one of the guys in charge of putting the security out there and the ushers and things like that. I'm sure his business has been devastated because there are no big events these days given the situation with COVID-19. And then at the 6:45 hour, I'm going to have a nice super guest here with Jessica Cox. I think a lot of people in Tucson know her as being, she was born without arms. She became the first, I think maybe only, airplane pilot, to fly a plane and continues to fly planes without any arms. And she's a very good cyclist. She's an eclectic woman, very bright, obviously. I'll ask her about going to the, I think it was the Middle East recently, Egypt or something. I think it was Egypt, to get an honor, very distinguished honor out in Egypt. I think it was Egypt. So here we are. We had a call already?
Well, that was actually Cody calling in a little early. He said he's going to call back in a couple of minutes here. So I figured I'd give you time to set up the show.
Yeah, yeah, great.
And a lot for us to talk about. Steve, you got a packed show today.
Yes, I do. It's a lot of fun. It's easy when you have guests, and then the topics will be very fun to talk about or interesting to me, and I'm sure some of the listeners, in terms of economics and being a sports fan and what it all means. What did I watch sports recently? Oh, you know, they're still running horses. The running horses, we see the WWE, UFC over the weekend, but it's going to be slimmer and slimmer.
I think UFC just announced they were suspending 3 upcoming fights.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Let me say this. So I'm working from home for my other job,
sure.
My real job, and a lot of people are, obviously. And now that you saw that there are no more restaurants, you can't go into restaurants and eat.
As of 8 o'clock tonight.
Is it 8 o'clock tonight?
Yes.
So I have an hour after this show. So I can eat out in fast food anyway, like drive-thrus and going to eat. Stupid stuff.
Which that'll always be open.
So let me tell you something. So if coronavirus doesn't kill me, it's going to be high cholesterol, diabetes, or something stupid because, you know, I have to eat this fast food stuff. I'm not a good cook.
Right.
I cook chili. I'm not sure I want to eat chili the rest of my life. But you know what I'm saying?
I do.
And it's funny because I was on the phone with my friend back in New Mexico, and I was in the drive-thru, and he says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm ordering food." And I was joking. I have my medicine on my table, you know, to keep all this stuff down, but I'm eating it. And then I said, coronavirus, it'll probably be killed by the cholesterol or diabetes. You know, who knows? Who's going to beat who?
Right. You don't know.
I don't know. Here I have this, you know, chicken tender sandwich, fries, supersized soda. Coronavirus got nothing on me.
Steve, if that hasn't gotten you yet, I'm not too worried. You'll be fine.
I joke about it, but I'm serious about it too. You know?
Yeah.
In fact, my son's visiting me and he says, "Dad, you need to go walk. I'm a little chunky." He says, "No, you're not chunky, Dad. You're just thicker." Thank you, son.
More to love.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But that's out of the mouth of babes come the truth, you know?
Yep.
Drunks and kids tell you the truth.
The emperor's new clothes.
Yes. Anything else in the sports world?
So I just thought a couple of interesting things that happened today. Tucson High's Daryl Jones was let go after one season, which is a big surprise.
We had that at All Sports Tucson.
And Tucson and Blake Martinez agrees to a 3-year deal with the New York Giants.
That said, and nationally, guess who has the coronavirus?
Kevin Durant, has it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to continue to kind of surprise us.
Yeah.
And you're almost going to say, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Sadly. I don't want to get political, but I think a lot of people are still kind of, a few of my friends are still doubting this. It's all media driven and hype, blah, blah, blah. I'm in the media business. But if I'm at an event where they're telling me this, the powers that be are telling me this, guess what I'm doing?
Yeah.
I'm writing about what they're telling me.
Right.
So that's just my political statement right there.
Yeah. We just, you know what? And look, it's time to take this seriously, no matter who you are. And that's the whole point of not going out. People are like, "Well, I'm healthy. I can go out." It's like, well, you could be spreading it.
Yeah.
And at this point, I mean, I don't want to get sick. Yeah. Even if I have it for a week and it goes away and I'm fine, I still don't want it.
Yeah, right.
So
hey, let's take a quick break here. Come back on the other side. Talk to Cody Ritchie here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera, and with me is Tom Callahan. And on the phone, I have Cody Ritchie of Crest, one of my good friends, one of my known big sports fanatics, and not a biased guy. He's kind of like a straight arrow guy when it comes to sports. Although you're a big Coyotes guy, right?
Oh, I love hockey. I love everything, but yeah, hockey. I was really into hockey this year, and they took the season away from me, so kind of sad.
So what does it mean? I mean, all this started maybe 2-3 weeks ago. I know you spent a lot of money on advertising at ASU and locally. Now, no one's getting to see that because there's no one going to games.
Well, before you say ASU, remember, we spend more at U of A than we do at ASU. But yes, we do spend money, I reluctantly, but we have a presence up in the Phoenix area. So, yes, we do. So your question is, what does it mean? It's really funny because on, I think it was last week, Thursday, I got a call from a big wig at Fox Sports Arizona. He called me apologizing that they'd canceled the game that night. The Coyotes were playing, I think, who were they playing? I can't remember. But anyways, They canceled the game. He said, we're going to be showing reruns. You know, of course, your ads will be running. And at that point, Steve, it's just, this thing's bigger than really thinking about yourself on in that particular realm. It's a pretty big deal. So I totally understood what I really felt horrible about. And you know this because you're on the business side of sports, is that he said Saturday night would be the first night that I think there's 62 people that put on the production of the game, the guys in the trucks, the camera guys, you know, right. All of the above, and that none of them would be getting a paycheck.
Yeah, you know how that goes. And in fact, I have Andy Brown coming after you, and that's where it's affected. It's the lower level people, and not say lower level, but, you know, those concession people and everybody else.
Yeah, and what was really cool, being a fan of them and, you know, all sorts of sports, U of A, the new owner has fairly deep pockets, and he's paying all hourly, those types of people, game day people. He's paying them all of them through this crisis, so, or situation, health scare, whatever. But that's pretty good to see that the people with the resources are doing stuff like that. But yeah, it's a little weird, yeah.
Yeah, you know me for a long time, and I used to be a huge fan like you, and we met each other back in the day when you first got here. And I kind of got soured on sports because, one, some of the guys are jerks, and I'll openly said that, attitudes, yada, yada. But then now you see a lot of the good, heartwarming stories. They have money. They're going to help out as much as they can.
That's true, yeah. I mean, you and I have had many discussions. I met you, Steve, 32 years ago,
yeah.
Tucson, 33 years ago at the summer over the Tucson Toros, and known you, we're the same age, have a, you know, good run through this community. And there are some people in sports that are, you know, not the nicest people in the world. Most of the people are really good people. And I think we have an opportunity through this deal that we're all in this together. I was driving down Broadway the other day, and I was looking, every single car, every person has a concern. Every parent has a concern. Every business owner has a concern. Every employee has a concern. I mean, everybody. And then there's the health scare, too. Everybody's worried about themselves, their mom or their dad or their grandparents or their kids. So this is the one time. It just feels so different than anything. You know, I was telling all the people that work with me, we've been through the first Gulf War, the second Gulf War, Y2K scare. We went through 9/11, the financial crisis, Ebola, SARS, everything. But this one feels different. And so I think that this is a time where, and they never shut down sports. I mean, during 9/11, they shut down sports for a couple of days.
Right.
But they didn't take the NCAA tournament away from us. We've had seasons canceled because of strikes and things like this. But I think everybody feels a little bit like, I was telling a friend the other day, I would probably, if the U of A said they were going to play football and they're going to get beat by 20 points, I'd still go to the game now. You know, where before I'd be like, nah, I'm not going to, you know, I'd be disappointed or upset. But it's a weird time.
Yeah, no question. So, in the meantime, for your love for sports, what are you doing to facilitate that?
Well, I think just to kind of circle back with one of the things that you were saying as far as our advertising and that type of thing, we're still planning on doing it when the season's open again. I mean, we're very committed to branding ourselves through athletics and the feel-good nature of athletics, and we pick and choose kind of what we do with University of Arizona and Arizona State, and even NAU, we're on the scoreboard up there. We're kind of proud that we're statewide. We really focus on the military, the welcome home celebration at both U of A and ASU football games. So you're not really picking and choosing a school in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
We do some of the professional sports, but we're going to have to probably tighten our belts just like everybody else. But then we have our the guys who sell us the advertising, the ladies that sell us the advertising, they're our friends too. So we're going to do our very best to do business as usual. This community's been, and communities have been very, very, very good to us. So we're going to do everything we can, because we have to instill confidence that, that all is right. So we're going to do our part. But as far as sports, oh my gosh, where do you start? I was looking forward to the start of baseball. I'm not a big golfer, but I love to watch the Masters, NCAA tournament, hockey playoffs were coming. I hate to admit this because people will think I'm a little weird, but remember way back when, Steve, you quit years ago, but we have fantasy baseball with Mike Fader and all of us.
I was going to go so there, right? You geeks continue to do the fantasy stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, so what we're doing is a few of us are drafting each other's teams online, and then we're drafting every guy's team, and then they grade you, and then we're seeing who has the highest GPA. So, I mean, we're just trying to figure out, you know, something to keep the competitive spirit alive.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I think the initial shock last week is kind of over, and now we're just kind of content, you know.
Was that Tuesday? I think that we talked about Tuesday, maybe Wednesday of last week, being one of the strangest days in my time when it relates to sports, because you heard these things. Okay, it's settled in. No, they're going to take away NCAA, and then this, and then this. It was like the dominoes fell, and you're thinking, I can't believe this is happening. How did it feel?
Oh, it's just super strange. And the funny thing is, you know, I work with Corey Williams, who's your good friend, and I was talking to Corey, and he said, now the thing that's amazing is that in school, you know, our culture has taught us that the athletes are the cool people, the people that y'all want to hang out with. But now he says you got Scott Van Pelt and all these guys on Sports Center interviewing some little nerdy scientist who thinks he can solve this coronavirus and how it affects sports and, you know, da 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 da. And he says, now it's cool to be smart again. So that's kind of a different angle.
I have no chance. I'm not smart or athletic. Well, the funny thing about it, wasn't it what they told you back in the day? The geek shall inherit the earth?
Oh, yeah. And so they're going to be the ones owning all the teams and stuff like that. Whoever solves the virus will probably own by the Dallas Mavericks or Mark Cuban or something. No, it was weird. It was totally weird. I know a friend of mine, a guy who works with me in Phoenix, he's really depressed. Like, he's my job is to cheer the troops up, and I called him last night, and I heard through the grapevine, this is a guy who's a pretty happy-go-lucky person. And I'm just like, hey, we'll get through this. It's not the end of the world. I don't, from a financial standpoint, I don't think it's as bad as the financial crisis of 08, 09. Who knows? But, and he goes, you know what's really got me bummed? I'm like, what? He goes, I had to call every parent. He coaches Little League Baseball. And he's been coaching, and he gets really into it. And he goes, there's no season. They canceled our season. So it affects everybody, you know, from professional sports all the way down to kids' sports.
Yeah. No, it does. It does, because you don't think that's all going to happen, from the little kids to the big kids. And now, in fact, I don't know if you saw my poll last week, and I was being joking, of course, jokingly said this. In 9 months, either we're going to have a lot of kids born because of the togetherness, or a lot of divorces because the wives will find out about the husbands, and the husbands will find out about the wives because they'll have to spend time together.
Yeah, I've... I've heard that too. So luckily for me, I have a really nice wife.
Yes, lucky for me. Yes, you lucky guy, you.
Maybe not for her.
Well, I'll interview her tomorrow. So yeah. I have like 4 minutes with you, and I know you've been with me, 87, we met, we talked about. Give me some of the great moments at U of A for you.
Well, first, one of the great moments that I remember about you was we jammed about 100 of us into your apartment over off Kolb and watched Pernell Whitaker fight Julio Cesar Chavez.
Oh, wait. And, God, I forgot about that.
That was fun. I always remember that because we were kind of ribbing you a little bit on that one. But the great moments, like Ortiz Jenkins, when he flipped into the end zone, I was at that game up in
Washington,
Seattle.
Yeah.
Washington with my late boss, Bob Mueller, who was – you know, the greatest guy in the world. We were there. I was at not only at the Final Four in Indianapolis, but I went to the Sweet 16 in Birmingham when we beat Kansas. That was unbelievable, and we beat Providence. And then I think the greatest football game I've ever been to in my entire life was is, I think, was it 93 when we beat Washington 16-3 and they had like 40 yards, 50 yards of offense or something like that. And the crowd was amazing. The weather was perfect. It was November, one of those day games, and I'll remember that forever.
Wasn't when Washington number two in the country, they had Steve Entman?
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, Cody, I don't mind the time where I can't remember yesterday, but I can remember stuff like that.
Well, they had Billy Joe Hobert and Mark Brunell as their, and Napoleon Kaufman, I think, was the running back. So they had pretty good offensive players, and we inserted our will. I mean, that's back when we were just tough. It was cool being a Arizona Wildcat football fan, because you'd go anywhere and people knew that defense. They just sort of respected you because you were from Tucson.
In fact, Anthony and I, Jamito, talked about this game yesterday. I don't know your thoughts. Did you go to the Fiesta Bowl in 93-94 when they beat Miami in the shutout?
Oh, well, I always say if there was a playoff, if there was a true playoff, like an 8-team playoff or something like that, we were the best football team in the country that year. We were, no doubt. I mean, we beat them 29-0, and I was at that game. That was phenomenal. That was a good one.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've seen a lot of good victories. I've seen some heartbreaking losses too. The 89 game up in Denver when UNLV beat us. And
right.
So
right.
Lots of them.
You put
them all together, there's been some good moments.
Oh, no. Yeah, and we still have some more left. I think we still have some more left. We'll see what happens in the coming years. I know you're a huge fan for U of A. Now they just got to put it together. I mean, and then sounds easier than done, but they have a chance.
They do. I just, you know, I've been telling a lot of my friends, I think things have to get back to basics and understand who we are and not be afraid of, you know, who we are and stop worrying about, like, trying to compete with the USCs and the Oregons and those people. And a friend of mine in Phoenix who went to U of A works with me. He said, you know what, if we just pretend we're the Iowa of the Pac-12, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, better days ahead. I sure wish we could go to a football game right now.
Even if you're going to get beat by 20 points. Thanks, Cody. I appreciate
it. I'd probably go to a women's tennis match or a men's tennis match right now. I would yearn for that.
We got to come to the house and play ping pong. Let's go.
All right.
Hey, thanks, Cody.
Steve.
Take care, man.
All right.
That was Cody Ritchie of Crest Insurance. Thanks a bunch. We'll take a break here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. And with me is Tom Callahan. And now with me is Andy Brown, former U of A hoops player back in the day. Second Final Four, I think it was, for U of A. And the VP at the A team. Is that right?
That's correct, Steve. How you doing?
Fine, Andy. I just got off the phone with Cody Ritchie. I'm sure you know who he is. Maybe friends.
Yeah, just listen. Yeah, I love Cody. He's a great guy for our community. He's one of the mentors I like to live up to. His
model.
Company, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you guys are kind of in the same boat in terms of things that are happening. I know you're a big U of A fan. You do a lot of events at U of A and a lot of events locally, you know, concerts and things like that. Your job must be affected by all this.
Oh, absolutely. About 90% of what we do is, you know, sports and entertainment. That's the same as you. As a fan, you know, when that goes away, you kind of disbelief, you're like, what's going on? What's happening? And then when your phone starts ringing and clients start saying, hey, we're canceling.
Right.
Then you're kind of looking like, wow, this is getting serious. So it's, you know, that first part is disbelief. And then you kind of get into the shock mode. And after that, you're like, well, we need to step up and start doing stuff. And, you know, trying to take care of those people that live day to day or week to week on those paychecks. And what can we do? You know, you start looking at guys like Cody who, hey, we can get involved in our community. We can start doing stuff. And what can we do? You know, sports is gone, but now what do we do?
This may be a dumb question because it affects people differently. When did you see in the last week or two or whatever that this just got real?
Thursday. It was Thursday. Sitting in Thursday. So I had a trip. We actually had a trip planned to go to Australia, Steve, me and the family. So we were sitting there Thursday at the office, and the phone just kept ringing. Every phone call, next phone call was, hey, we're canceling until April. Hey, we're canceling until May. So you just sit there and go, wow. For us as a company, we were diverse enough that we're going to weather the storm, but it's those guys, those people that do this, you know, the second job to make a little extra money, and now that's gone. You know, everybody's feeling it.
Yeah, no question. And there's no relief in sight. I think I'm okay in saying that. It doesn't look like it, at least.
Yeah, it's a day by day. It's a very fluid situation, and people just kind of keep, you know, the days keep getting extended. You know, let's say it's a 4-week period. Now we're looking at an 8-week period, and now people are talking about July.
Right.
You know, maybe July 4th we'll start having stuff again. So cities, Marana, the city of Tucson, everybody's starting to cut back on all their events and just keep pushing out that deadline. And so everybody's like, well, this storm's going to be a little longer than we thought. So
yeah, no question. In fact, in a year, you've been with A-Team how long?
It's been 12 years now, Steve, 12.
12 years now. And in a year, how many events do you do?
Oh, my goodness. Probably, we probably average 1,500 to 1,600
wow.
a year.
So you're looking at 356, 52 weeks out of the year.
Oh, we're slamming, yeah.
Yeah, you guys are thin and busy as all, which is great for the company.
Yeah, it is great. It's right now, the spring is our busiest time. So February, if you think about Gem Show to Rodeo to the golf tournament, rolls into, we were going to do the World Baseball Classic, rolls right into Spring Fling, then you're looking at the fair, then it's graduation. So springtime for us is amazingly busy.
Wow,
and
wow.
We're putting a lot of, it just like Cody mentioned, we're putting a lot of money into the economy, and people are buying stuff, and it keeps things going. And it's just come to a halt on all facets. Everybody's business is hurting somehow.
Right. I don't even know if it's, you know, the one thing is we all realize it's everybody's in the boat.
Yeah, and you find out that sports is intertwined. Sports and entertainment is such a part of American life now and cultures, being social and being out and doing things and being seen, right? You know, it's a big thing at the U of A basketball, to mm-hmm. be seen. Who's there?
Right.
And now that's done. You can't. Now it's, I'm talking to somebody on the phone and Skyping them, right? So it's all come to a stop. And it's,
yeah, so how are you doing it? You have, at the office, you must have a few employees, but most of your employees, you know, at least at the games and the facilities, are contractual or something like that?
Yeah, well, they're all W-2. They're all part-time employees that work. You know, they have most people have another job. They do this on the side. They do it, like I said, for extra money, either putting their kids through college or they're paying off some bills, or maybe it's a vacation they like to do. So we have about 7 or 8 of them that are full-time that do a lot of stuff. So we diversified about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
We've picked up a lot of non-event stuff, which has kept our overhead pretty low, and we can maintain it. And so we saw that on the wall, you know, a few years back, and we've been able to get in front of it. But it's the people that work week to week, and they're counting on that $200 here or $300 there to
sure.
pay a bill or
sure.
you know, go out and do something. So that's tough. That's
yeah.
tough for everybody.
It's funny, and this is
an owner,
and I don't mean this to be. I don't yeah. mean this to be, because this is a job where I work, where it's kind of like I don't make a lot of money. It's beer money, if you will, and I don't drink beer, so
right.
which makes no sense. But to them, it's beer money. To me, to them is yeah. life money, which is, you know, sure. we all have that job.
Yeah, keep their phones on,
yeah.
you know, whatever it
yeah.
is, keep the lights on. But that's where, as a business owner now, I feel the compassion. I feel bad for most of those, all of those employees. I'm like, I want to be able to do something extra and help them out. So we're trying to figure out what we can do. And so we started talking about doing trainings. Let's do some trainings, bring people in, and maybe we can get them 4 or 5 hours a week. And then they say you can't have more than 50 people. Then
right.
it was no more than 15. Now it's down to 8. It's like, well, now we got to do it on the computer. So how do we train people, and how do we keep them engaged? And
right.
so when it does come back, because, you know, when it does and it will come back, we want to make sure everybody's on board still, and we don't have to go out and rehire 100, well, 200 people.
I know how you can help me there, Andy.
Yeah.
Adoption. You need to adopt.
Can
you adopt?
I'll adopt you.
Yeah.
You bet. You bet.
I'll make
you.
It'll be a tax write-off. Come on, man.
I gotcha.
Hey, let's kind of talk about something that's fun. I think I know
okay.
we've had you on the show before,
yeah.
but some of the listeners, because I was on a different time. Your best moment in being on the bench here in 94,
yeah.
watching Khalid and Damon?
Yep. I loved actually practices were the best, Steve. When you would sit, I'd sit in practice, and you talk about, you used to watch some of those videos and those shows about the Olympic team, you know, the dream team.
Oh, yeah, right.
Talk about how the practices were more intense than the games.
Yeah.
That's how our practices were. There were times where No one touched the ball except for Khalid and Damon because they were on opposite sides. Whoever crossed half court was shooting, and it was going in. It was like Steph Curry day, right? Khalid would pull over half court, 2 feet in, shoot. All right, and then he'd run back the other side. And finally, we're like, dude, what are we doing? We're running up and down. All we're doing is watching balls go through the basket and inbound it and watching them shoot.
Right, right. No, let me say this.
Those are great days we're watching them.
Well, let me say this because I've said it before, and Sean and I have got into it kind of in a jokingly way at press conferences. I still think, and people can say, I don't know anything, Steve, but if Sean were to go to that way to play, just let them play and go up and down like the Damon and the Khalid time, and yes, they have to play defense, of course we're not going to relinquish the defense, but let them play, let them have some fun, let people beat 98-90. It doesn't matter. This is like democracy. You win by one, you win by eight, you still win.
Yep, I'm biased. I love that up and down play. I love watching that, and throwing the full court press at people. We had three of the best guards.
Let's go through that. Never. You had Damon, Khalid, you had Reggie.
I mean, those are the three best guards, offensive and defensive, in the league, I think, in the nation that year. And we played a great full court press. We could trap you in half court. We could drop back in the zone. Coach Olsen was a genius when it came to that stuff.
Yeah, and he had to change. Before, I don't know if you were on the team earlier, but he had to change his style because he had the big guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of the first year where we didn't have a really big, legit 7-footer in the middle. We had Joseph Blair, who's obviously turned out to be an amazing player and coach now.
Right, right.
He wasn't oversized. He wasn't 7-foot. He was, 6'10".
6'10", yeah. What he had, and I was going to ask you about his personality because he was a goofball back in the day. No one really kind of knows that. But he was, what he did is he finished. Around the basket, he was gold. And then you had another dude who finished. 10-foot jumper, who was that? Ray Ose
was classic, yeah. Ray Ose, little thing about Ray. Ray was one of the most athletic players I've played with. One of the most down-to-earth guys ever. He'd be the first guy to go, hey, Andy, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just hanging out. He's like, well, why don't you come with me? We're going to go walk down. Okay.
And he didn't talk.
He was amazingly down-to-earth.
And he didn't say a whole lot.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he still doesn't say. I don't even know where he's. I know he's in Phoenix, but he's like, invisible.
Yeah, he's in Phoenix. A couple of guys talk to him here and there. Reggie, I know, talks to him once in a while. And we've been trying to get him back to a reunion. I think some of the guys have been talking about doing another reunion here with the 9-14.
Mm-hmm. That's 26 years ago, isn't it? 26.
Oh, my goodness, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's a few pounds and a lot of gray hairs.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, people ask me, did you play football? No, I played basketball. Like, you played basketball? Yeah, it was like 60 pounds ago.
Yeah, but they need to guess. Let me say, so JB at the middle, you had Ray Ose, you had the three guards, Reggie, Damon, and Khalid. Yeah. Tell me who else was on that team?
Yeah, Corey Williams coming off the bench, Corey.
Joe McClain?
Yeah, Joe Matt. Yep, and then you had Flanagan. So Flanagan was a fifth-year senior. Remember Kevin?
Got hurt earlier, so he got another year.
Yep, and then Dylan Rigdon was the other guy.
The free-throw shooter.
Amazing shooter, yeah.
Yep.
So then there was me, Jarvis Kelly, Jason Ritchie.
Yes.
We had a pretty small team that year.
Yeah, well, you just ran. Here's the ball, guys. Go.
Yeah, and Coach put them together. I remember you give Coach Olsen a week to plan for somebody, and it was going to be – it's going to be tough to beat us.
You know when I thought that team was going to be really, really good, and you may agree with me or not, but we were in Hawaii. I was in Hawaii covering you guys in the Maui Classic. You took Kentucky to the brink and should have beat them.
Should have beat that team, yeah.
And you think, these guys are going to be good.
Yeah. That was a light bulb went on everybody. Everybody said, we belong here.
Right.
We belong where we are. So when Michigan came in, as you know, next week when we were home, we laid a shellacking on those guys.
Right. It was a Fab Five minus one guy.
Yeah.
And Reggie owned them, and so Khalid owned them.
Khalid owned them, yeah. Yeah. But that was a great team. We all fit together. We all played together well, and everybody knew their roles. And, that's made it successful.
What a great philosophy or concept. Teams who know their roles that can play together.
Yeah. That's how it goes. I mean, it was people ask me all the time, hey, how come that team isn't that good? Well, they don't have it. Like, what is it? I don't know.
You don't know
until.
Yeah, you don't know until you get there.
if you're not in that locker room with guys day to day, I mean, I was talking to Chris, their trainer, right? Their weight trainer guy.
Yeah.
Because these guys are kids still. They're 18, 19 years old. They still have, remember when you were 18, what were you going through? What was in your head? You're like, yeah, my girlfriend, my classes, and right. I got to play ball in front of 20,000 people. Like, oh my goodness, it's just surreal for them to have the everyday teenage problems,
right?
But yet expected to go out and perform in such a manner where people love you, people treat you as a king, a god. That's a lot of pressure on an 18-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah, sure, I get it.
Not to mention, you got your girlfriend and you got your classes you got to go to, and I got to go and watch tape for 3 hours, and I got to do this, so.
You lost me at this. Don't have a girlfriend. Yeah. You're better off.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, I got to go. We got to have you. Right, when we can have you in the studio one of these days, we'll get you in the studio.
Yeah. You got it, Steve.
Cool. Thank you.
Talking to you, man.
Great, Andy. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye.
That was Andy Brown of A-Team. We're going to get a hold of Jessica Cox here on the other side here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, your host. And now we have a special guest on the line, Jessica Cox, newly appointed or named the dedication recipient of El Tour de Tucson. How does that sound, Jessica?
It sounds amazing. I'm just getting used to it. It's pretty awesome.
How was your day? I know you had some interviews with the media.
Oh, it was awesome. I started off the day with a flight over northern Tucson, and it was beautiful. It was a little bumpy up there, but that went well. And then, of course, I did the interview with Arizona Daily Star to celebrate the dedication title, and then just did a couple things for my speaking business.
Nice. I think we're very proud of you. I've known you for a while now, maybe 5 or 6 years, done some stories on you, and then I kind of suggested, let's go for Jessica Cox as the dedication recipient, and I think everybody at the El Tour loves you and is very proud of you. You're the first, tell me, I could get this wrong, you're the first woman born without arms who can fly, who has flown a plane?
Yes, I'm the first certified pilot who flies the airplane with her feet.
That's unbelievable. I was watching something today, and I said, you know, everything takes practice and patience and practice and patience, repetition and all that, for free throws to hitting a ball to doing this. How long did it take you to do that?
Well, it definitely took a lot longer than the average student pilot because, for one, it took a lot of muscle memory and working out how I could use my legs in a way to fly that airplane safely. And there was no way that my flight instructor during the training period was ever going to let me ever risk my life or do anything risky while being up there. I was going to be a safe pilot like all the other pilots out there. And it took hour after hour after hour of flying, though, to finally feel the confidence that I could be safely maneuvering this airplane without any modifications, just the standard aircoupe airplane, handle that in the sky safely and to meet the standards of the Federal Aviation Administration. So it took hour after hour. I logged it somewhere, but that doesn't even cover all the hours that I put into it. It did take a long time.
So how did it feel, one, the first day that you got in because you wanted to do this, you had this ambition to do this, one, and then when you finally did it, what was that emotion like?
It was definitely the greatest experience. It was the greatest accomplishment physically for me to be able to maneuver this airplane in the sky by myself. And the biggest celebration for any student pilot, you talk to them, is safely maneuvering the airplane into a landing. And landing is the most complicated part of flying an airplane. Taking off, anyone can do it. Anyone can fly. But when you come in to land, there's a lot of things happening all at the same time, and you just have to safely maneuver that airplane down to the ground. And so that feeling, once I was able to land for the very first time with no one else in the airplane, it was the greatest sense of accomplishment, I would have to say.
Since then, how many times have you gone up in the air and landed?
Well, I, for let's see, I've been flying off and on for 10 years, and I probably, I don't have my logbook here in front of me, but I've taken off and landed many hours. I don't know if you're asking me solo, meaning by myself, or with another pilot. And of course, you know, it's very different if you're with another pilot. But I don't have my logbook in front of me. It's out of the hangar.
Are you looking at maybe 100, 200?
Yeah, probably around 100, I would say.
Wow. Wow. What a great thing that you do. And now you're a cyclist, and that's, you've been doing that for a number of years too. Tell me how that was in beginning that.
Well, I wanted to ride a bicycle as far back as I can remember. I remember it was almost like a rite of passage to learn how to ride a two-wheel bicycle without training wheels. And for me, it was a harder process learning. In fact, my parents really had to struggle with how they were going to teach me, because I started off with training wheels like everyone else does as a kid. But then there were a lot of challenges because of the fact that once you take those training wheels off, it's all balance. And at first I started with prosthetic arms on the bicycle, and we thought that was going to work. But then I was having trouble with some of the minor micro adjustments you have to make with prosthetics, because they're not as efficient and not as, they don't move as quickly as limbs do. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenge. And so the training wheels, taking those off, it didn't work on a two-wheel bicycle. And then finally my dad thought, well, maybe we should go with an adult version of the tricycle, which is like the three-wheel bike. And so he ended up modifying my bike into a three-wheel bicycle, like an adult three-wheel bicycle. And once I was able to do that, it was the most thrilling thing to be able to finally ride with all my friends, to ride with my siblings. And then as an adult, I really needed something that was more stable, because any tricycle is not inherently stable when you're turning a curve fast. There's a chance that it could tip over. And I tipped over a couple times. So I wanted to increase my speed as an adult, and thought, well, I need to find another type of bike. And that's when I found out about the recumbent trike, which is a lot lower to the ground and more balanced, because there are two wheels in front and one wheel in back. And that was the next step, was taking on this challenge of finding a recumbent trike wherever in the country that I could find one. At the time, they were fairly rare when I started my research to look into a recumbent trike. And I found out about one all the way near San Antonio, Texas. I made my way out to San Antonio, Texas, to a little small area called Refugio, Texas.
I know exactly where it's at, yes.
Oh, you know where it is? Oh,
yes, yes, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There's small towns in Texas, a lot of them. But go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was pretty neat, because Barry Bruenhauser, he was building these Scarab trikes, recumbent trikes, from scratch out of Refugio, Texas. And I thought, wow, this is pretty neat. And I went out there to meet him. He allowed me to try riding one of his recumbent trikes, and I was hooked. I said, well, that's what I need to get, because it has 8 gears. It's stable. It's a lot faster than my adult tricycle. And it was just all over just a better bicycle. And I thought, I need to figure out a way to do that. And that's where I had to just save up some money to be able to get my own recumbent trike. They're called Scarab trikes. They're very rare, because he's no longer making them from scratch. But I had a Scarab trike sent to me once I saved up the money for it. And the next step was trying to modify it so that I could steer it, so that I could brake, so I could change my gears on that. And it was a process, but we figured out that I could use my rib cage by rocking back and forth, and that way using my torso to steer the bicycle with extensions from the original handlebars. And then I could use a foot brake and step on that foot brake with my right or left foot.
If there's a way,
brought down,
Jessica, I don't know if you know this, but if there's a way, Jessica will find it out.
Well, I had help, so yes, I guess if there's a will, there's a way.
Yes, yes. True. No, that's fantastic. And now you ride 25 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles, stuff like that.
I do regularly about 15 miles when I go riding on the loop. And, of course, just whenever I have time, I get out there and enjoy the weather.
Yeah, as everybody should. I know it's kind of still safe to do that outdoors. We can still do that individually or in a two or three group. You know, obviously we can't get into big groups. But I think you're going to be starting a ride every now and again, or try to, won't you, with your foundation? Tell me what it is.
My foundation is Right Footed Foundation International, and we are thrilled to be the dedication recipient for this year's El Tour. And yes, we'll be doing monthly rides, so we are excited to include anyone who's interested in joining us on the loop as we do these monthly rides to bring awareness to what the foundation does and to spread the word around the community.
How many, how many kids, I'm sure you see kids who are like you, how is it for them when they see you do what you do?
Well, there is no better way to reassure someone that their future is fine than to catch them at a young age. And I mentor children who are born without arms. And when they see me, their eyes just like light up like, oh, I'm not the only one. And she's doing so much and I can do that too. It's just so reassuring to not only them, but to their parents that they can live an extraordinary life and do all the things that they hope that they could do and more. It's really wonderful. It's very rewarding to be able to be that for others.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I have like maybe a minute and a half. You were in Egypt recently talking about stuff like this?
I was in Sharm el Sheikh, Egypt, and it was amazing just to be able to speak to the youth, empower the youth to believe that they can achieve the impossible and they can achieve their dreams.
What a fantastic way. And well, I have to have a minute. If you can quickly tell my listeners a story about you being there and being kind of like a woman up there doing what I guess they don't let women do.
Well, it was pretty phenomenal because I was speaking in this big auditorium with thousands of people, thousands of youth, and I was sharing about the youth and how they can be empowered to change the world. And later, after that event, the president of Egypt decided to give me an award. So 2 days after, in the closing ceremonies of the big World Youth Summit, he invited me to come back on stage, and he gave me this absolutely beautiful gold-plated award from him because he was appreciative of the message that I shared with the youth and everything that I've done to empower others.
Tell me real quick, too. I think, didn't you give him a high five or something?
Yes, I did. I do a foot five instead of a handshake. And I had to be careful because I know in some cultures, showing the bottom of your foot is actually disrespectful. So I learned how to do a foot five when I was in the Middle East by tapping the side of one's foot, tap the side of the sole of the foot against another person's foot. And that's my foot five.
That's your foot five. Who would have known that? Only Jessica Cox. Good to hear from you. I hope today was a good day. Tomorrow the press will see it all the public will see it all in the paper tomorrow. So we're looking forward to that.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to get the title.
Well, thank you, Jessica. Appreciate it. Take care. We're ready to go. That was Jessica Cox of now the dedication recipient of the El Tour de Tucson. Looking forward to that. Thank you, Tom. We're good to go.
Absolutely. Steve, what a great show today.
That was a quick show. Good show. Yeah, great guests.
Yeah.
Economy, sports, inspiration. I can't do it all there, Tom.
You just did it all.
I just did. One day out of the week. That's good. Hey, let's try to fix this coronavirus tomorrow.
Okay, let's get on that.
Okay, here on 10:30 The Voice. Thanks for listening, everybody.